You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm delighted to welcome Elias Lonsdale back to the show. Elias is credited with inspiring a generation of astrologers, going far beyond mundane astrology to create visionary star genesis. Able to communicate with the other side, he has brought forth significant new information about the nature of dark and light and what's to come from our future selves. Elias pinpoints the underlying nature of the current time and gives detailed descriptions of how our time fits into the coming transformations. He has authored numerous books, Inside Star Vision, Star Rhythms, Inside Planets and Inside Degrees, Book of Theana in the Lands That Follow Death, and co-authored Cosmic Weather Report with Mark Borax. His latest book, just out, is titled The Christ Letters, An Evolutionary Guide Home. He has an upcoming teleseries, Love in Action, commencing May 7th. You can find out more about the series and his work at www.stargenesiswisdom.com. Tonight is the first of a two-part series, with the next part airing on May 4th. If you have any questions for Elias, please direct them to me at zanymystic59@yahoo.com. Now, let's welcome him back to the show. Hi, Elias. How are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
I'm feeling better today. I had a little stomach problem yesterday, but frankly, it's gone away. Wanted to let you know, too, that I received a copy of the Christ Letters, and it looks absolutely incredible. I can't wait to read it, and during our next show, I'll have a lot of questions about your new book.
Good, yes.
Now, the last show we did was in April of 2011, and we're here again in April of 2013, just about 2 years later. I'm wondering how events on Earth have aligned with Star Genesis and what your read of the times is 2 years later.
Okay, well, putting it simply, Star Genesis puts the heart star, the star heart, into astrology. It's not a mental discipline. It's a heart path. And so I've been following with my heart the progression of humanity the last 2 years, let's say. And I've been, my job, my task, my assignment is to track everything. Track whatever's happening on all the different levels, tune into it, be aware of it, particularly the innermost levels that people miss.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've basically found is that everything promised is being delivered, and paradox of paradoxes, you won't even know it unless you participate in it. There's a kind of a participatory democracy of the new Aquarian energy going, where you have to participate in it, you have to engage with it. If you engage with it, you discover that you're in a different world. And if you're somehow conditioned not to engage with it, then you find yourself backed up into an old world. And maybe part of you feels one way and part the other way. But that's what's been happening. That's what's been coming on, this lesson, this wave of that particular phase in evolution.
Well, how long can these worlds coincide with each other? It seems that there's quite a divide developing between those who are anchored in the mind and the pursuits of the ego, and those who are living a path that's more heart-centered.
Yeah, well, it's the nature of a mentally based world to always divide off and divide further. And yes, the world of limitation is subtracting the world of what's coming on as the future, because it subtracts everything. But what's coming on from the future is this immense wave of change. And if you're with it, if you're engaged with it, if you're active with it, if you're willing, if you're responsive to its love current and its awakening current, then you're there in this different way. And it's true that those who have not gotten it have always kind of, you know, ostracized or made this seem marginal. But their world is essentially, it's disintegrating. I mean, I hate to be like this, but it really is disintegrating.
Mm-hmm.
Not super fast, but it's disintegrating. So it's hard to worry about the thought forms of old. It's easier to move with the feeling currents of the new.
Mm. Well, it does seem that there are immense forces that are almost feel as if they are lined up to keep this immense wave of change from occurring.
Well, yes, there's always a counterforce in this world drama. There's always a counterforce. And the counterforce is extremely active, just like, you know, they're on all the TV shows these days. They're everywhere in all ways. They're showing up everywhere. We're in the world full of bad guys, you could say, mm-hmm. to be satirical about it. And they're always squeezing tighter. They're always, you know, making it even more difficult to live in the world as the world is. So there is that layer, that film, that strange energy that keeps coming. Mm-hmm. And then there's this other thing going on that just isn't a part of that, that is just not this opposed to that and that against this, good versus evil. But it's like an all integrative whole Christ love stream.
Mm.
And it doesn't stay back in the point when we argued with each other and couldn't understand each other.
Mm.
It's like it moves on.
Mm-hmm.
The Christ evolution is moving on. We have to move on with it. We have to find our heart's opening.
It sounds almost like a quantum leap.
It is, actually. It is, because, you know, obviously we're rigorously trained to be mentally functioning whatever units. And to become an absolutely living being in a multi-universe is quite a leap, and it's also what we've been preparing for lifetimes. So it's nothing new, it's just that we have stage nerves that, you know, it's a big play, it's a big production. So we have stage nerves, you know, at the last rehearsal.
Right. Well, I can't wait till the closing bows are taken. So this seems like a very old story that's been recurring over and over and over. It's really quite tedious. I don't see how we can live through another repetition of these cycles. But didn't we just come to the end of another major cosmic cycle, the 26,000 plus year cycle, and then there are many millions of years cycles that came to a close. And what was the significance of the close of 2012. What's your take on that marker?
There are 7 points, seven points of Uranus square Pluto, 7 points happening between mid-2012 and early 2015. And one of those is coming up in a month from right now. And a really, really important one. And there were two last summer. The first two were last summer. And as far as I'm concerned, last summer was like the entryway into a new reality, into Aquaria. And then it takes each season after that. It doesn't just arise in one season. It arises in four consecutive seasons. So it's like a version comes in each season. We're in the last of the four seasons to open into Aquaria. So the full impact of Aquaria in people's lives will begin at the beginning of summer of this year, 1 year into it. And what we're activating here is cosmic awareness, Uranus, able to penetrate Earth depths, Pluto, and bring cosmic awareness into the earthly depths so that the world is transformed from the inside.
Now, there are 7 points, and we're coming up on the fourth, fourth point?
No, we're coming up on the third one. There were two
the
last
third.
Summer, then there wasn't... Oh, no, wait a minute. Yes, that's right. Yes. So we're in the third of seven, yes. They're coming about twice a year.
And what is this next one that's coming up? What does that... what is the feeling of that? What is that likely to engender on the planet?
Yeah, one of the reasons we set it up to do teleclasses right at that time, you know, starting 2 weeks before. This is, we're talking about, by the way, May 20th is the exact date of this. On May 20th, Uranus will be in 12 degrees of Aries. That means 11 plus. And Pluto will be in 12 degrees of Capricorn, 11 plus. They'll be in an exact square. And I work a lot with number frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
And the 12 and also degree meanings, and you put it together, and what you find is that the 12 Capricorn, 12 Aries combination is the most transformational of all of them. In fact, what it wants to do is to kind of get us to realize what's happening. It's not about something new happening. It's getting us to realize what's happening, because it's hard to catch up with your awareness on what's happening, because it's happening too fast and too powerfully on too subtle a level to quite be tracked until you just get hungry and thirsty for it, because you want to know, you need to know. You feel the call to know, to understand,
mm-hmm.
to be on the inside with it.
Now, how long will this next alignment last? Is it in the month? Does it continue on?
It's really strong for about 6-7 weeks. So we're talking about basically all of May and all of early June.
Wow. Now, then there will be four more. Apparently, there will be three more after that.
There will be four more. One's in March of 2015. So there's like another one in November. Yeah, there's another one in November, and then you get to, you know, the next year and one the following year.
Well,
so there's one coming up 6 months later.
Wow, it sounds like these are all perfectly timed as transformational signposts, and that we're going to be going through some major shifts in terms of our priorities and the shift from superficial life to maybe something more substantial by going inward.
Yes. I haven't talked to you outside of these sessions, but I wonder if you're experiencing this kind of this urge in you that's like this deep urge to really go through a transformation, not because everybody says it, but because it's just what's living in you. Do you feel it that way?
Yes, totally. It's kind of like being backed against the wall, and there's no wall, but there's nothing to push back against either. It's almost like floating in between several worlds. And
yes.
For me, it feels kind of like the difference between being a single point and shifting into some kind of multidimensional consciousness.
Yes, the Pluto part of it is that you can feel underneath a certain kind of void, a certain kind of emptiness, which takes some getting used to.
Yeah.
It's not really being lonely or cut off. It's being deeply in there in this new way that you're not used to.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I can definitely vouch for that.
That's the Pluto part. And then the Uranus part, you know, they're equal in strength, really. The Uranus part is that there's this arising of observant, self-beholding awareness, consciousness, that allows you to realize that all this is happening for purpose, and to get that so directly that you don't even know what it means anymore, what purpose is. You're just on that purpose.
Oh.
That's the Uranian track.
Wow. And these are both going to be very strong then for quite some time to come, it looks like.
Yes, they are.
Wow. So those of us who are slightly more observant and a little bit more awake are going to be going through the ringer yet again.
Yes, I would suggest that this one will probably be very charged and very welcome.
Well, good, good. Yes, because it seems like what I'm seeing in the mirror, the projection of out there, is no longer even an interesting play anymore. There has to be a larger reality that is able to be accessed and experienced directly.
Yes.
Well, now,
yeah, that's humanity's cry. Go ahead.
You mentioned that it's too subtle. You mentioned the subtlety of this. What happens to all of the people who are not tuning to the subtle realms and not even tuning to anything nearby, lost in, you know, fear and television and movie stars, and, you know, the illusion? Isn't it going to be more jarring for people who are awakened suddenly from a deep slumber?
Yes, it's not an easy situation at all for the people who want everything to be easy. It's not going to be. And I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I do know that it's just got a quality to it, the way you've has a quality to it of putting you right where you need to be. And most people aren't used to being put where they need to be. They just want to be put where they want to be. You know, to be really put where you need to be is a rude awakening.
Right. Very well said. And it sounds kind of like growing up, in a sense, that, you know, moving from being a child to, you know, having to take a little responsibility, perhaps.
Yes.
Now, you also mentioned the Age of Aquarius, which has been talked about a lot with numerous astrologers and speculators as to the timing of the age. And, of course, we know that everything can be accessed instantly from all levels. So there may not be an actual moment, but there might be a marker that signifies that we are moving into Aquarius, into an age that's more centered in that sign. Can you expand upon that?
Yeah. The way I'm going to say it is that we're right at the verge of the full impact of Aquaria. We've been, for the last year, kind of traveling through Aquaria a little bit incognito or unknown, and we're starting to align the inner and the outer and discover where we are. And as we do so, we'll feel that the Age of Aquaria has been on its way for 50 years, really. Mm. And will be still beginning for 50 years from now. So it's about like the center of a 100-year wave. And that it's been really building up a lot in the last year or so. And it will be really strong in the next year or so. Mm. And it's like the coming on of a different reality. But again, you have to engage with it. The principle of Aquaria is everything has to be mutual. Everything has to be full circle. Everything has to come around so it's, you know, empowering all of us and bringing all of us alive. So you have to be engaged with it. You have to feel, sense, know that the Age of Aquaria is wanting to show you what it is instead of somebody on the radio or somewhere telling you what it is. You need to know what it is from within yourself.
Well, of course, that's always wise advice to experience these things directly within ourselves rather than to take other people's word for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Even those of us willing to take on authority need to bust that authority about every third breath.
Very well said. So what happens to all of the divisiveness and division that we see going on about enemies and perceived differences and religious groups and, you know,
okay,
on and
I have a big hit on that. We have a very, very delicate underpinning to our world. We used to have this kind of stable system, and we don't have it anymore. So everything underneath feels very delicate, fragile, tenuous. really tune into it, especially on a collective scale. And so when you're in that atmosphere, you know, of all of that, it just feels to me like, it's like we're taking up a vibration. Here, let me put it in the most intimate way. We're taking up a vibration that we have ourselves co-created on the inside. And that vibration is coming to kind of infuse us with a truth and a reality that we can live. And all we have to do is be responsive to that vibration. It's a very loving and forwarding vibration. But there is this catch to the whole thing, which is you really have to give of yourself. You really have to expand. You really have to go beyond. Okay, now we have these very delicate underpinnings. And what's happened is that there's all these movements, these fundamentalist movements, not only spiritually, but also mentally and emotionally. And those who are trying to bring us back in time are working on all the different levels. For example, women reading a romance novel, that's emotional fundamentalism. A man getting involved with pornography at this point, it's emotional fundamentalism. It's turning the clock back to when your emotions were still childish. Mm-hmm. We're going to a phase where the emotions can, you know, can actually finally grow up. Mm. And we can actually feel the connection cleanly. Mm. And the fundamentalisms we have turned to on all the different levels basically lose their savor because we're just not interested in, we're not in the market any longer.
Mm.
Because we've gotten it that, yes, nothing is certain and that all our growth and evolution happens within that uncertainty. And then you awaken out of the trance of fundamentalisms and you realize that you don't need a place to hide.
Hmm.
You don't need a place to hide.
Hmm.
The future is beautiful and we don't need to live as though the present is the last gasp of the past. It's just all about future forces coming into play and coming in an accessible, loving, joyous fashion.
Now, you've tapped a lot into the other side, and it seems that there must be a time when the veils will thin enough where we will all have the ability to access our other selves, our future selves. What is your sense of the future selves that are working with us? Go ahead.
4 weeks ago, I had an experience here in Kona, in the Big Island, where there's a woman who's famous for gathering groups, Joan Ocean, and for
swimming
with the dolphins and the whales.
Oh, yeah, I love her.
Yeah, and she has this monthly group that I'd never met her before. I knew about her, but I'd never met her. So I went to this group, and the key to it was this moment in this guided meditation when you fly through a door and you engage your future self, your twin, whatever future self you can access. So everybody was doing it kind of in a certain way, and I just leapt through that door like my whole existence depended on it, and I bumped into my future twin, the one in me who is me from the future. Exactly what she had been talking about. And there he was, and he's been with me ever since since the 22nd of March. And what he shows me is that there are many, many future worlds, many alternate futures and many far futures and near futures, but that most people are being contacted by a near future self that longs greatly to give them a spark, give them an open portal, give them a feeling of life beyond death, and basically, you know, kind of alert them to the changes and open them to the changes. It's kind of like that.
Wow. That sounds like a breath of fresh air.
It is. It's the greatest, wondrous thing because it's all full of wonder and magic.
Now, what about the... I'm going to mention something here that we may not have talked about before, but what about the extraterrestrial reality? That is, those various elements that we may have originally been seeded from.
You know, I have a funny relation to all that, but I'll mention that at the event of Joan Ocean that I was just talking about, it was called an ET meditation, and there was a proclamation by some ET group that that day, the 22nd of March, was the first day of a few days in a row of this immense opening toward ETs visiting the planet. And so we were, you know, tuning into that energy, and I tuned into the ET energy stronger than I ever have in my life. And the only thing I can say about that energy is that it's an integral part of things. And it's not all of things, but it's an integral part of things. And we need that kind of cosmic higher frequency energy as much as we can get it. And then there are some distorted ETs that are sort of trying to wreck the whole thing. But let's just say that the real ETs are what there is to focus on.
Now, what about the energies from realms like people that bring in information supposedly from ascended masters and angelic realms? What's your feeling about that? A lot of that's been corrupted and is part of a false light paradigm as well.
Yeah, it's a particularly easy thing for that to get corrupted because you really have to be at one with Christ. You don't have to be a Christian outwardly at all. See my book. But anyway, you have to be at one with Christ inwardly, which means completely aligned with your own true self. That's the key of all keys. You really have to be all of who you are. That's what evolution's asking. And that's the Christ path. And when you're in that, then you can do it.
Yes, that makes so much sense because a lot of what we're experiencing as horrible experiences on the planet has to do with the stuffing of the shadow side and the denial that we live in. So
yes.
It seems that a major part of the work would be working on our shadow side and being completely in integrity and truthfulness with ourselves. And aligning with the highest within.
Yeah, it takes this extraordinary combination of discipline and abandon to be able to work the deeper, darker territory. Pagans are always very aware that you have to give yourself over with a certain abandon. And also there's this discipline that anybody who has this kind of rigorous masculine side, is very aware of. And the combination of that discipline and that abandon allows you to go deep and stay deep and work it and get through it and get beyond it and transmute it. But the discipline is crucial. And to really find that discipline, you have to be committed to yourself. Discipline comes from being fully committed to yourself and to your destiny.
Yes. And for what happens with those who are not?
Well, we like to play the game of karma. It's the favorite reality show that we've got, okay, to be, you know, silly about it. And in Karma, as the latest reality TV show, what happens is that everybody acts on automatic.
Yeah.
And everybody does the same things the same way and kind of thinks it's new. Just like those movies where somebody has amnesia and they keep doing the same thing, but they never know it's them and they never knew they did it before. It's like we're the amnesiacs.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So we forget that we just did it last life or last year or whatever.
Yeah,
and so but we do that a lot with each other. The hard part of the collective scene, especially in cities and stuff, is that we discover that we do this karma to each other. That's the downside of karma. It would be one thing if you just were on a karmic path and that was that. But we tend to sort of karmaize each other. In other words, to kind of make each other more compulsive and more stuck by a karmic connection. It doesn't have to be that way, but that's what we tend to do. So we have to learn a positive path with karma, where we don't, you know, impose any negative past judgments at all, where we do like those who've died, where they have this life review, and mm-hmm. they go back into their whole life. Hello?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They go back into their whole life, and they just, you know, are completely objective to it, but they're deeply present in it all the way through it, but they don't take it on the drama at all.
Right, right.
And they're very affirmative.
Right.
They're affirmative of the whole process.
So in a sense, we're, by doing a past life review in each moment or each day, we're able to keep up with the present moment and not create new situations that weigh us down.
I think Akashic spiritual practices are super vital. That's ones where we tune in and we do that kind of work you're talking about, and where we, you know, discover the ins and outs of that.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't being conscious and aware play a large part in what we're talking about, as opposed to coming from our unconscious behavior?
Yes, and I say again that we need a lot of open heart to really fully do it, because spirit is unfolding in an open-hearted direction. I know that from interacting daily with four children, ages 4 to 11, and these children are fully open-hearted, and when you're in that all the time, I mean, even though they fight and everything, when you're in that all the time, you know, you just kind of go, you melt, and I think everybody needs to melt a little.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Is there a way for those who don't necessarily have four children to experience that? I know for me, that often comes through my little Jack Russell Terrier. She causes me to melt all the time. So is there a resurgence of what people are referring to as the divine feminine starting to manifest?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the divine feminine is the bathing, the sustaining, the grace, the deepening of the interior and the subjective and the personal, which is what we're missing. Because very unmechanized. It's unmechanized.
Right, right. And it seems like most of society has been established or set up for whatever reason to become increasingly mechanized and stagnant.
Yes, that's why we need her so badly.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a man and you've ever been in love with a woman, you know that there's not your body and not even your soul, but your whole spirit craves to be with someone. And that's how it is with the whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
We feel that toward the feminine. We, all of us, women too, feel this craving to be with her, to find our way to her. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And it seems if women were, the feminine aspect were dominant at this time, there probably would be very few wars, if any, and there certainly wouldn't be the amount of corruption and greed and competition that we see that causes so much frenzy and destruction.
Yeah, it would take them a moment or two to shed their masculine outer garments, but yeah, once they got down one level deeper to the actual feminine in them, it would be incredible.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that we are definitely being helped from the other side and the invisible realms then?
They're helping us so much. They're helping us so much, and they're able to get through so much further these days. The veil is thin. The threshold is permeable. Well, semi-permeable.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there a time when we had a connection at the collective level telepathically, and we had abilities that were that we just simply have not been able to activate for thousands of years?
Yes, the age of Aquaria and the peak of Atlantis are extremely closely connected.
Oh.
And in the peak of Atlantis, the abilities you're talking about were with us tenfold. And they will be with us again, tremendously. And many of us are already experiencing them. How many people that you know have gotten either more psychic, more tuned in, more aware at some fundamental level in recent years than they used to be?
Oh, just about everybody I know.
Yep.
And the children.
And some of them have taken huge leaps.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And you mentioned your four children, and I've done some research on the new kids, and we all know the labels. There's a whole rainbow of colors that have been attributed to these kids, but they are definitely coming in with abilities and awareness and knowledge that's not young soulish at all.
What I observe the most in the natural kind of new kids, the kids I have are not the techno ones, they're the nature-oriented ones, whatever you want to label them. In those kind, at least, there is this quality of feeling such a kinship with the planet and with the planet's evolution at such a fundamental level that it's almost the only thing they know.
Huh. I have to ask this question. Because nature has been so corrupted, and there's a great deal of information out there about the agenda to further corrupt nature through nanotechnology, chemtrails, GMO food, fluoride in the water, and so on and so forth, until it is absolutely irrevocably taken over by machinery. Will this be something that we will be able to recognize and reverse before the destruction has gone even further?
Yes, and I think we're going to have to wrestle with it quite a bit for a while. I think we're going to have to walk a far edge, like in a suspense thriller, because we don't quite get interested unless it's a suspense thriller.
Well, let's hope this is a James Bond movie. Comes in at the last minute.
It seems usually like it works out. Usually it works out.
Well, now you mentioned Atlantis. That was quite a while ago. And was that one of the periods when there was a golden age? And is that something that we can apply to what's this period that we're entering now with all of these alignments?
Yes, we are. We're moving toward peak of Atlantis consciousness. It's going to take us decades to get there because that's a very high level. Mm. And on the way there, we're going to confront every shadow and every difficulty you can have, because you have to realize that with Atlantis comes a big dark ticket, which is not only did it fall, in other words, went through a declining period quite considerably intense, but then it was flooded out and was totally destroyed, in essence. And so it has a kind of a dark edge to it, where if you're really going to get with Aquaria, and this is the key to our times, really, if you really want to get with Aquaria, you have to also face what we've done to the world before and relive it internally and think it's going to happen again.
Mm.
But it's not about creating the same thing. It's about living it out imaginatively.
Mm.
Just before it would happen. First you get to live it out inwardly, and then you realize, well, it doesn't have to happen. We did this already. We did this before.
That makes sense to me. I hope that it makes sense to the rest of the collective when the right time comes.
It's a big one. We're talking about a really big one.
Well, yes, my goodness. The priests and the corruption that occurred in I have a vision of it. I can see it in a kind of dark way, and it's quite frightening. But then the seeds of that were sown for a long time. time prior to that. So it's not like we can't see something coming. We're living through that right now, in a sense, aren't we? Reliving some of the aspects of Atlantis and some of the other cultures?
And the good news is this time we get to get it on the inner. We're experiencing it in this Akashic illumination path that we're on, where we're getting everything on an inside track. And that way we don't have to play it out in 3D. We get to play it out internally.
Good.
That's why so many people have been obsessed with Atlantis for so long. They're actually working it out for everybody else. Because usually they're the ones that have the biggest roles that they can't quite shake. You know, they did this and they did that.
Oh, yes, that makes sense. Yes, there are a lot of Atlanteans here on the planet now, aren't there?
Yes, and often they have this kind of tragic side to them, and then this incredible emergent consciousness to them also.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of an Aquarian quality, isn't it?
Yes.
Hmm. Now, what about what's your feeling about this idea? Some of my guests talk about the ascension movement and moving from 3D to 5D or 6D or 4D or, you know, multiple D. What's your sense about where we're headed in terms of physicality and the dimensions that we're able to manifest, including a physical body?
First of all, I always feel that this is an embodiment reality, not about getting out of here, but getting into here. Mm. Ascension is meant to be the first step in a sequence of experiences that lead to deep incarnation. And then deep incarnation is the first step in a series of things that lead to further ascension.
Oh, how interesting. That's a different take on it.
Yes, and so ascension is not quite as all the way out there as they're portraying. It's more like a natural process where you wake up in the highest space and then you send it on to deepest space so that you can start to change your way of life. And then when you change your way of life down below, then you open further above and these incredible things start to be revealed.
Well, it sounds like it would be more appealing to experience ascension.
It is, because we all feel, whether we remember this or not, we feel this immense loyalty, love, affection for, connection with, engagement with Shiva Earth, our Earth Mother.
Uh-huh.
And she has a bigger hold on us than Divine Mother does. And what she wants us to do is to fulfill what we came here to do, which is to be fully who we are in this world and feed that into the world now that we've fed everything else into it.
Now, can you explain the distinction between the Earth Mother and the Divine Mother? Because I think a lot of people get those two confused or interchange them.
Divine Mother is the mother of the universe. She's the creatrix of all existence. The father isn't really the creator. That's a whole other story. It's not that the father's some minor character at all, but not really the creator. But anyway, so she creates everything. She forms everything. And the Earth Mother does the exact same thing for the Earth.
And where is the Earth Mother in terms of her evolution? Does she evolve, and is she continuing on into a future of evolutionary state as well with us?
Yes, she's most engaged with the fact that we are going to mutate into a space where a new species comes forth, partly from us and partly from other cosmic sources, and will be able to generate very, very quickly, very soon, a different vibrational frequency on the planet through this new species. This is something that's been given to us to explore and to understand, and I think that's really where it's going. That the Earth herself wants, she's very tolerant of us and our all that we go through, but she's waiting for us to evolve, because one of the key characteristics of the new species is that they are truly at one with the planet, and they're not always trying to get out of here. They're not itchy they're not itchy. They're peaceful.
That begs the question as to the forces that are so destructive and seem to have an agenda to destroy the planet and the humans on here. The Gnostics refer to those as Archons.
Yes.
Would you elaborate on that a bit?
Okay, here's where you have to be more careful than on any other subject you ever stumble upon. The subject of evil has landmines throughout it. The two things I'm going to say is, number one, the denser the world you go into, the heavier the presence of evil.
Mm-hmm.
And the lighter the world you go into, the lighter the presence of evil, down to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So evil is a depth under force of our world. And as such, it has many faces to it. What is it doing? It's doing an extremely convincing theatrical portrayal of the end of the world. They're trying to sort of get us into that story, you know, get us caught in that story. And essentially all the progressive spirit forces are simply trying to get us to go with the real timing and the real possibilities of the now.
Mm. Well, that's encouraging that there are light forces, or forces that are not, that are less dense, that are working with us.
They have a great sense of humor too.
Yes, I think you're right about that one.
But go on.
This seems like the human drama for a reason. Human comedy, that is. It's a drama and it's a comedy at the same time. A lot of people have difficulty with this question of density and evil, and of shifting density and moving into, it's not that people want to move out of the earth or away from nature and away from the goddess and the wonderful spirit elements. It is the horrendous density that is stifling humanity and creativity that seems to be what we really want out of. It isn't the connection with the mother. It is the wanting to get out of this density. So as you see it, are we about to shift? Is it possible for us to shift internally out of this density? And does that in turn project into the reality and change it?
We definitely can, through our own biographical path, we can transmute the density to such a point that it starts to overflow into being able to do that as well on a larger scale. And that's one of the movements that's going to be very strong in the next few years, because essentially we have to do high sacred magic. That's what's going to get us through this. And that's one key part of high sacred magic.
Mm. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I'd like to hear more about high sacred magic. That sounds a little bit like some of the information that was taught in esoteric mystery schools.
Yeah, they always had a sense of magic. That's one thing that has stayed in all those times and places. The way of magic is really this, well, typically what it is you get caught in some particular frequency, some particular reality frame, some particular realm. And then you do magic as a kind of compulsive, being caught up in that particular realm. You just kind of do all this stuff. Now that's kind of gross regular magic, and it's got its uses, but it's not what I'm talking about. In high sacred magic, what happens is you center everything in this magical will, but the magical will isn't, it's kind of a direct pipeline to the core of existence. So you're in this magical will, but it makes you just be at one with your immediate field. And the real principle of magic is to be at one with your immediate field, to be actively at one in your immediate field, because you then fill your field with a certain life force and a certain illumination if you're magically there with it. This is not what most people think of as magic, obviously, but this is what I see as magic.
Hmm. I like that. I like that. And of course, the light or the luminosity comes from within, right?
Yes.
It's not something we draw in from outside ourselves. And
no, there's two great sources of light, us and our future selves.
Ah, and many are connecting with their future selves, aren't they?
Yes, and you will see it that they will become brighter, not in some artificial, silly way, but in a real deep way.
Well, I know that I'm connecting with my future self because it's always complaining about electrical cords and the primitive technology here on the planet.
Well, yes, you have one of those, like I, my future self is pretty cantankerous about some things. Yeah, I understand that.
They can be very, very, this darn thing, haven't they gotten over this yet? And nuclear power, what was that? What were they thinking?
Well, you got to admit, they have a lot of things to base that kind of questioning about.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, one could ask those questions all day long. I was wondering, since we're getting fairly close to, we've got a little more time left, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to just express whatever it is that you're presently feeling the most passionate about and what you'd really like to communicate with the audience tonight that might be empowering or that you would like to share.
Well, it's there in the book, The Christ Letters, which I gather you and I will discuss next time.
Oh, yes.
And it's there in these teleclasses that will be starting on May 7th, but I'll also bring it in this moment. We're calling those classes Love in Action. What it means is that, as I see it right now, we're caught in the midst of the action, and the action is like a horizontal plane. It's like a horizontal feeding frenzy. And everybody is kind of active, 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 active everywhere, going here, there, mind, space, energy, feeling, memory, vision. Okay. And then while they're doing that, back and forth, in and out, there's also a place where we can be, which is the vertical, when we're really, really aligned with the vertical, which is the love principle. The love principle is the vertical, is the actual vertical of our life.
Mm-hmm.
Comes direct down into our heart from above. And what the love principle is that if we're present, heartfully, givingly, gladly into this world, we can change the world. So what I want to do in those classes is go way into that. But even in this moment, I want to say all of us know how to change the world. You change the world by becoming incredibly engaged with your own process in a non-egoic way.
Mm.
It's a universal formula. It'll work for anybody. If you can be truly with yourself, but not ego hung up on yourself, negative or positive or both, you can do incredible work for the world.
Mm.
And that's love in action.
Beautifully said.
So I feel like that's what we need to focus on. That's what we need to move toward.
That's a wonderful prescription, and it just resonates completely with me, and I'm sure with everybody that's listening. So that, in a sense, is one of the ways that we can align with a future that is following a much higher path, that is, all the futures appear to be, that you've been able to see, appear to be of a higher path. Is that correct? The ones that have multiple futures?
Oh, there are alternative futures for everything to fall apart and crumble and be ridiculous. but I've been told for 25, 26, 27 years that, that is how false prophets speak. They always tell you that you're in doom time. And
right.
So I've learned basically, I don't listen to doom consciousness. It's not that I totally tune it out, but I listen to it on a low volume.
Right. Right. That makes sense, because what you think of and what you believe is reinforces that reality.
Yes.
Nice. Well, we're just about at the end of the hour. I can't believe how quickly this has gone by. I'm just really thrilled to talk with you tonight. This is wonderful stuff. And I want to make sure that you mention your website and the teleclasses that are coming up and where they can find your latest book, which I will have read by May 4th.
Do you want me to say, I'll just mention that I do star readings, star Genesis readings, and I have two phone numbers I can give people if you like.
Oh, wonderful. Please do.
Yeah, one of them is an answer phone that's always there, which is 831-425-3134. You can always leave a message there, 425-3134 in the 831 area code, Santa Cruz. And then the other number is local here just for the moment, just for the next few days, if anybody wants to call now. And that would be 808-328-0848. And we'll put up a different number soon, because we're going to move in a few days. So that's our, and I just want to say that these readings are so different from astrology readings that they're simply, it's not the same reality whatsoever. It's like astrology is straight, and this is very crooked and curvy and cylindrical and full of amazing dips and valleys.
Ooh, I like it. I like it a lot. That sounds very interesting. Well, Elias, I want to thank you for coming back again and for doing these two shows. The second one will be coming up on May 4th, and we'll be talking about your new book. And if anybody has any questions, please write me at zanymystic59@yahoo.com. And thank you so much for being on tonight. I have so much to think about, and I have your wonderful book to crack open and start reading.
It's great to talk with you. I really appreciate you.
Oh, I do too. I do too. All right. Good night, Elias, and good night, everybody.
Good night.